that I touch this at all? Turn it that way a little bit. Is it okay? This is the one? Okay. Just get my... I'm Honey and I'm an addict.
Hi, Honey.
I love you lots.
I love you more. And I'm glad to see you here. It's a busy day. It's a sunny day. And I know how we are in Narcotics Anonymous. When the sun is shining, it's more business outside the rooms than it is inside the rooms. But it's good that every now and again we can stop and focus on just why we're here and what brought us here and some of the things that we've done since we've been here. I got down here like Tuesday. And it was pouring all the way, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained. But I had faith in, and of course, the weather report. And it told me that it was going to be nice this weekend. And so, you know, I look forward to it. And when it's like that, I'm glad in a way that I do have this commitment because it stops me for a moment and gets me settled and remember just why I'm here. And but for the grace of God, I know where I would be on this sunny day. I would be the same place I was on that rainy day 2 days ago because it just did not matter. First things first when you're using. And it's first things first in staying clean. And I think if I keep that principle of first things first in front of me and everything that I do, no matter what happens during the course of my day, how things begin, how things be are in the middle and how they end, I have a chance just for today of staying clean. And that is the priority in my life today. I got a lot of things going on, a whole lot of things I'm doing. You know, this is going this way, business, this, a bunch of stuff is going on. And I have to take time and remember that it is the grace of my high power that I can stand here and share with you all my experiences on this principle in Narcotics Anonymous. And it is the principles of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness that set the foundation for my recovery. I have not planned anything. I thought about it for a minute, and I said, you know, I've been around long enough to know not to even go there. Not to start planning what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it, because when I stand up here at this podium, if I share my experience, strength, and hope to the best of my ability and be as honest as a liar like me can be to the best of my ability, then I've done my job. And that hopefully some addict, any addict in this room, if no other addict but this addict, will get the message that I need just for today. That I don't have to use no more. I can put that stuff down, don't pick it up, and find a new way of life. My friend and I, what did come to mind, though, and it's just been one of those little things that was so funny to me that I think about it all the time. As of a couple of weeks ago, I was at my friend's house, and another friend of ours came by. And we were just chit-chatting. So I said, well, what's happening, you know? And, not a lot's going on. Yeah, da-da-da-da. Well, how are you and your friend doing? Oh, we broke up. What the hell? I said, what the heck? What happened? She had issues with my jealousy. And I said, now I know you didn't get that when I first just said that, because it took me a moment. I said, what? She had issues with me being jealous. I said, she's got issues, and you're the one jealous? And if you've been around here long enough, you would think, and you might know, that is some six-step work, you know. But let's say you ain't been around here long enough. And as this person, particular friend of mine, ain't never been around here. I said, but that's a big case of denial. You know, that's a case of denial. You got issues with me being jealous. Never looking at me. never looking at the role that I play in a particular situation. Me being jealous is not the issue. The problem is you're jealous. You got issues with me being jealous. And I thought about that for a couple of weeks, and I still chuckle at it. And I said, most of my life, I grew up around people that didn't have problems. Nobody had a problem. It was always somebody else's problem. And as a result, I kind of adopted that same behavior. You know, the term that I have my mother uses to this day, at 72, I've been like that all my life. Anybody ever heard that one before? That's just the way I am. I've been like that all my life. And I thought that too for years. And I said that's just the way I am. And I could cock my head to the side and give you one of those dips and say, that's just the way I am. It's when I came into these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I lost that luxury. I could no longer say, it's just the way I am. Just the way I am caused me to use most of my life. Just the way I am caused me to go in sequence from one drug to another. Until I had like a kaleidoscope of drugs. You name it. I never met a drug I didn't like, you know? Until I landed in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. When I landed into these rooms, now if you follow me, is when I had my first experience with honesty. See, I associated what that person was saying that day to denial. And denial for me is that inability to recognize and see a situation as it really is and to own up to it. Honesty. The inability to be honest with myself, to recognize. The principles of these steps begin with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. If I cannot get honest with myself, there's little hope for me to get the true benefits of this program, much less be honest with you. I could tell a lie when the truth would do. I got to the point in my life, a lie would come out of my mouth first, and then I'd walk away and say, damn, I didn't have to, now that was a wasted lie right there. I really didn't even have to tell that one, you know? I would automatically lie. And then after I got in this program, I developed something of a conscious. I was a suffering addict because certain principles that my parents did instill in me gave me a conscience. And I knew when I was doing wrong. But I made an agreement with my conscience years ago. I'm going to put you on this shelf. Don't you bother me, and I ain't gonna bother you, you know? And after I got clean, it worked its way back to me. And when I would tell a lie, or when I would do something against certain principles, I would feel it. Now, I'm not standing up here telling you that I'm perfect in any way. I'm not gonna stand up here and tell you that I will tell a lie, that I won't tell a lie, because I will. What I'm telling you is that on a daily basis, as I work this program to the best of my ability, as I go to meetings, as I listen to people share, as I honestly try to do the best that I can, a day at a time, certain things that I used to do, I just can't do them no more. You know. I thought about my mom again. When she says, I've been that way all my life, and the way she'll say it, and I said, well, you know, it's never too late, you know, to try to, no, and that's the end of it. She means no, and I thought, in this program, I learned to always just always, to the best of my ability, open up a little bit and say, well, just maybe there's a chance. Last week, I had a bunch of things going on at the same time. It was like, damn, you know? But there were things that thank God for being clean, I was able to do. I had one of those patio enclosures put on the back of my house and then added a deck onto that. My car was broken into. Hey, but I got a car. But my car smashed the window out, didn't even do it in a good way. I was saying, like, damn, I could have cracked the window real neat, got in there, got everything I wanted, got out. You know, you might have gotten your car and drove away before you even knew the window was missing. You know? They did a sloppy job. They did a sloppy job on my car. And I said, oh, my God. So I was dealing with that. And I had a few other things going on, and I was up to here. I had to rent a car, and the man, after the insurance took care of the rental car, I owed 8 cents a day on the rental car. I had it 2 days, 3 days. And the man said, did I want to leave the balance on my credit card? And I left, you know, it was $100 that they had charged against it. And he asked me, did I want to leave the balance? So I said, well, oh, don't forget to charge back that $100. He says, oh, yes, that'll be $99 and do the math, whatever, back to your account. I said, well, oh, no, it was $100. He says, oh, do you want to pay it in cash or do you want to leave the balance on? I said, well, it was $100. He says, I know, but that's 23 cents. And he got it. He got it for the deck where the people had screwed my deck up and they had to tear the deck all the way down when I was real cool with them. He got it for the rental car. I mean, he got it for the broken into car. He got it for the rental car. He got it for the project that I was doing at work that I procrastinated about. And then the manager said, like, when are you going to finish? I let that man have it over that 23 cents. And when my friend picked me up, I was sitting on the curb, outside on the curb of Enterprise, just sipping a cup of coffee like a kid, pissed off. We went to breakfast, and she said to me, she said, have you been taking your medicine? I took it last week. Why? You know. What about the so-and-so med? No, I ran out. What about this med? No, I haven't taken it in about a week. Well, she's not in the fellowship either, so she didn't suggest that I go take my damn medicine. She all but took me to get the damn medicine to take. You need to take your medicine. Now, in the fellowship, we don't say you need. We suggest. You can play with the words any way you want. She told me, you need to take your medication. I didn't say anything. This was Saturday last week. We had breakfast. I went home. She went home. I called CVS, filled up the, you know, got the medication, took the medication. Sunday, locked myself in the house, didn't bother nobody, gave the medication time to work, piddled, you know, and came back out Monday. Feeling a hell of a lot better. Shit was happening still. Things were happening. And I was able to make it through. Some of us have to take medications. I didn't say abuse the medication. Some of us are on medications. And you have to do what you have to do. Here, where I'm going to is open-mindedness and willingness. I learned in this fellowship that I can listen to what you're saying, evaluate, at least listen. I wouldn't even listen to what you had to say because it wouldn't have been not too long ago if you told me to take what I needed to do. My medicine ain't got nothing to do with that 23 cents. My medicine ain't got nothing to do with that damn person breaking in my car. My medicine ain't got nothing to do with this, on or off the medicine. I've learned since I've been in this fellowship, it's not the situation, it's how I react to the situation. My actions are more important today than the situation itself is. I don't care what the situation is. It's how I react to it that can make or break my week. Not just the day, the whole week, and I can live in it. Months go by, and I'm still in a rut behind something that happened earlier on in the month. Today, what I can do is I can listen. And I'm not up for saying I'll take every suggestion. But the first person I generally listen to is my sponsor. And I'm there in my recovery now. I'm not a day-to-day, all-day-long whiner with her. When I call her, we can cut right to the quick. She's been with me 14 years. And we can get right into it. Hit it, and then we go on and talk about something funny that happened, you know, on the way to the show. We start laughing and joking. I get with my sponsor. That's where I learned open-mindedness from. If you don't have a sponsor, I suggest you get one. If you got one, I suggest you use it. So what I just explained to you all is that in a matter of speaking just these few minutes, in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I do not have the luxury of denial. I do not have the luxury of a closed mind. I do not have the luxury of just saying, that's just the way I am. What I have learned today is, first things first. First thing is being honest, coming out of denial about any situation. And I was talking about today's life situations in recovery, not just talking about the using. Y'all know about that one. Apply what I'm talking to today about the times when we used to use. You know, what I'm talking about is how I live today without narcotics, without Odessa, without Kamikaze, without water shots. I'm telling you how I live today without macadamia nuts. Peanuts and soap. I'm telling you how I live today, how I handle these situations. And the first thing I have to do in all my affairs is to practice the three principles. Be honest, not in denial, because when I'm lying to myself, it doesn't matter who else I lie to. I have to first get honest with myself. The second one is to be open-minded. I didn't think there was another way of life. I thought I was going to die using. My biggest fear was that I was going to be that no-name person over there in D.C. as D.C. General with the toe tag. You know, that was a big fear of mine. It didn't stop me from using. People constantly ask me, especially people that aren't, you know, in the fellowship, but didn't you think this? But didn't you think that? You don't think when you're in that way of life. You don't think. Because if you do, that's worse than using. You know, that'll really mess up your high. You start thinking out there. You know, ain't no time to be thinking. You know? and then the other thing of willingness. Can this thing, can I actually do just that mustard seed? Can I do just a little bit to help change this situation? I'm telling you all, if I'm next month, if God gives me May 18th, it will be 14 years. If God gives me April the 24th of this month, I will be 50 years old. You know, this blessing has come into my life through the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. If you're not as old as I am and you come into these rooms, all you're doing is starting a journey that your higher power has given you the opportunity to travel on to experience something like you've never experienced in your life. Give it a chance. Be honest. That mustard seed of hope, open-mindedness, and willingness. And you too can have this. You can have this gracious gift that I have, and it's the program of recovery. They talked about us speaking for, like, I don't know how many minutes, but I'm kind of like, when I've said whatever I had to say, anything else I say thereafter, I'm babbling or repeating myself. So what I will do is I'm going to step back from the mic. I'm going to thank you all for taking time out of the busy day to come in here and start this program for the weekend. And listen, I'm going to keep coming back, and I hope you do too. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Pete.
Okay. I'm an addict. My name is Pete. And the topic is, it works how and what. You know, I get intimidated with these microphones. I don't mind leading a meeting with this many people, but the microphones really bother me. So anyway, what I'm going to talk about here is Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. And I've been clean since December 4th, 1989. Before I got here, my knowledge of living life like normal people, I didn't have a concept on how to live life. When I was growing up, what I was taught was how to behave, not if I went to jail, but when I went to jail, by the guys I used to hang out with who were older than me and had the experience. So they told me, this is what's going to happen, this is what you need to do when it happens. And I was fortunate enough not to ever do no hard time, but I was in little short times in jails, DC jail and Seven Locks and places like that. And I started using when I was 12, and I stopped when I was 32. And thinking back, it was 1969 when I started using. That makes me feel pretty old, but it was 69. And I was on my own at 17. My parents were from Ireland, and they died when I was 17. And I have three brothers, and we all grew up in D.C., and I'm the one that went. They all went a good way, like getting jobs and things like that. And I started hanging out with all the thugs and started doing what they were doing, and ended up getting me here. So I'm 20 years later. When I got here and I started going to meetings, I was a beaten and broken man. I remember I was walking around D.C. Couldn't do anything to get high anymore. I couldn't steal. I couldn't do the things that I needed to in order to use. I was just beaten and tired, and going to prison sounded like a pretty good thing. And I remember walking around the city trying to find a place that would send me to treatment. I had heard about these treatment places, and I was trying to find one, and I'd go into a health clinic, and they'd say, you got to go there. Somebody'd say, go to a church, and they'd help you do that. And I went there and tried to do that. And none of that seemed to work. So I ended up going into Maryland and doing this crime and getting arrested for it, and being put in jail for a little while, and got out and started doing the same thing all over again. And they put me on probation, and I was fortunate enough, the probation officer who I had he had some experience about recovery, and I told him that he may as well go ahead and lock me up because I was going back. I was going to end up back in jail anyway. So he gave me a few dollars and told me where to go, and he told me I could either go down the street and buy a bottle of beer or a bottle of wine or whatever, or I can go to this place and get some help. So I did both. I got a beer and went to this place to get some help. And I remember where I was, because I passed there a lot, and I remember how I felt. when I was heading out there. And they put me into, I got into a treatment program for 30 days, and that was enough to get, I slept in a clean bed and gained some weight. From there, they dropped me off in D.C., and I thought I was going to a halfway house, and I ended up living in these trailers downtown where they homeless people, and they had a bunch of trailers for homeless people, and one was designated to homeless people who wanted to get clean. And there was like one or two people in there that wanted to get clean. Anyway, continued going to meetings and got into a transitional program for homeless people in recovery and stayed there for 3 months. And from there, I went into a recovery house and stayed there for 2.5 years. And the reason I was doing those things was because I think the way I felt when I came in, beaten and not, you know, couldn't look anybody in the eye. I was unemployable, and I was a neglectful father, and I was a thief, you know, and all these things we become when we're out there using. And so that's where I heard it works how and why. I used to go to meetings, and I would listen to the readings in the back of the room, and I would always listen to how it works because I wanted to know how this thing was working. When I was in treatment, that was the time I met the first person who I believe actually used like I did and got clean and was living a life. In 89, he had like 12 years clean. That was like forever. And what I heard in how it works is that if I want to change my life, if I want to become a productive member of society, if I want to be a father, if I want to have a roof over my head and, you know, and have peace in my heart, what I needed to do was start learning how to the spiritual principles of the steps of this fellowship. And I went to meetings for about 4 months without sharing, without raising my hand, without hugging anybody. And I was very desperate to stop feeling the way I was. And I thought I was going to go back out and use, but I raised my hand at a meeting. The hardest thing I have ever done in my life was to go into a meeting without any drugs in me and ask for help. And I did that. I raised my hand and I asked for help. And I got it. I got a guy who told me he was my sponsor and gave me his phone number and wrote on the paper, call me every day. And I remember, you know, thinking, all right, this is what everybody else is sharing about in the meeting, so this is how it works. You know, I got to start calling this guy every day. And I did. I started calling him and meeting him at meetings and reading the basic text. We didn't have the book, It Works How and Why, then. We only had the blue basic text, and that's my favorite book. That's the first book I ever read all the way through at that point in my life. And so he started working the steps with me, and the first thing I had to do was learn about surrendering to this program and be willing to do the things that are necessary in order to stay here. And the first part of that was hugging people. And I did not want to hug people at all. And so he told me I had to hug 5 people at every meeting I went to. I was going to about 10 meetings a week, and I was hugging 5 people at every meeting I went to. And sometimes I would just go up to them and say, my sponsor told me I had to hug 5 people, so let's go and get this over with so I can get out of here. And so I did that, and now, you know, that it became easier and easier. And I learned what the first step said about being powerless and my life being unmanageable. It was so obvious, you know, that I was powerless over the disease of addiction, and my life was so unmanageable it almost killed me. And that's where the complete surrender came in. You know, it's like, I'm going to do whatever these people tell me to do, that I see it working for, then I'm going to do it. And I started doing things. I continued going to meetings, and I eventually started sharing a little bit. And then I remember riding through Rock Creek Park with about 6 or 7 months clean with this sponsor, and he had a convertible, and we were riding through the park, and I had 6 months clean. I had never had 6 months clean. I call it my whole life. My whole life I used. And all of a sudden, I'm in this park, you know, with this guy, and it's a spring day, and I'm kind of enjoying it. And he said to me, how do you think this is happening? You know, why do you feel this way? Because he asked me how I felt, and I told him, you know, this, I feel pretty good. And I realized it felt pretty good. And when he asked me how I thought it happened, I kind of like said, it's beyond me, you know, I don't know. And then it kind of clicked that there was a power greater than me that guided me into Narcotics Anonymous, and I could actually see that my life was changing, and I was starting to feel pretty good. Not real good. My hands still were shaking, and I still was scared to go places. You know, I didn't think I deserved to have fun, you know, and all this stuff. I was a mess. But for that moment, I wasn't using, and life was better than it had been for a very long time. So that's where I came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity, because the only sanity I ever knew, I guess, I don't know. When I I knew that I lived an insane way of living. And when I got clean and was in that park, I kind of got a glimpse of what sanity was. And so I continued to do that stuff. You know, I continued to live in the recovery house. You know, I continued to go to meetings. I continued to work with a sponsor. And then after about a year and a half clean, I got an opportunity to go up to Ocean City, New Jersey, and work. And, you know, sometime between then and the day I left to go up to Ocean City, New Jersey, I knew and felt that there was a loving and caring higher power working in my life. And if you haven't experienced that, you're missing something. Came around all my life. I used to have to go to church, and my father was what I call a raving maniac. He was a using addict, and he died from this disease, and his drug of choice was alcohol. And we used to go to church and come home from church, and he would, at any given time, beat the hell out of my mother or beat the hell out of one of my brothers, or, you know. And then we would go to church the next Sunday, and if anybody asked how we were doing, we were supposed to, we're fine. How are you? I'm fine. And I wasn't. You know, so I blamed God for a lot of what my situation was. So I didn't want to have nothing to do with God. And that changed, because the last couple years of my using, the guys I hung out with, we had 3 or 4 dying every year of overdoses. And these guys I hung out with on a regular basis, and they all started dying. And I remember one of them saying, wonder who's next. And this guy said, it's probably going to be Pete. And, you know, I thought he could be right, because we all used the same. And it ended up being him. And out of about 15 guys I hung out with, I think 9 or 10 of them overdosed in a 3-year period, or were a couple of them were killed. And so I knew there was a loving and caring higher power working in my life, and I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to the God of my understanding. And I had to do that on a daily basis. I was told that this is a just for today program, and to work it just for today. And that, I could do that. You know, I could wake up in the morning and the Just for Today book was just coming out, and I'd read the Just for Today, and I'd say the Serenity Prayer all day long. And I really was believing that if I did that, that my higher power was going to helped me get through the day, and that I couldn't do it alone, and that I had to ask for help, and I had to stick with the people who were in recovery, not just clean. I had to be with the guys and the ladies who were about being clean. And that's what I did. And right when I went up to New Jersey, I wrote my fourth step, and it was the most I have ever written on anything in my entire life. When I was in school, I didn't do a whole lot of writing. I was out of school by the eighth grade, and I was juvenile delinquent, and we used to do things. I was in a special class. They had special classes for, they said we were special, but we were all a little nutty. And all the guys I was in that special class with, whenever I saw them, they were all addicts, you know. So I wrote all this stuff, it took a while, and then I shared my fifth step with the sponsor I had. And the one thing that I learned was that I had somebody in my life at that time who believed in me before I was capable of believing in myself, and was willing to take time in his apartment to listen to me share my fifth step with him. And that meant a lot to me. And what I did is I read some of it, and we talked about it. And this guy got a little choked up, you know. And that made me believe. I saw something in another human being that I hadn't seen, and I don't think I've ever seen it. Some sincere empathy and sincere feelings about, you know, my life and our lives and the way we live, because he could relate to a whole lot of it. So I went up to New Jersey and stayed up there for about a year and a half, and I kept the same sponsor, but I talked about the sixth step with them, and I learned a whole lot about the character defects that I had, and I was aware of them, and he told me to just put a line down the middle of a piece of paper and write down on one side all my character defects, and on the other side, the solution to those character defects, and try to work with the solution. And for a long time, I did that. And somebody talked about jealousy, and one of my biggest character defects was jealousy. And it almost destroyed my relationship with my wife now. And that sixth step is what helped me to pray to my higher power to remove that shortcoming. And it took a while, but I no longer have that character defect of unjustified jealousy. You know, there's no reason for me to have it. So the steps did that. And the eighth and ninth step, and the seventh step was my shortcomings. And everybody makes mistakes, and it's okay to fall short as long as I can own it, try to do better the next day. My eighth step, I had a whole lot of people on that. A couple of those people, most of them were my family. Two of them were my mother and father. The father who I didn't like, the father who was the raving maniac. And when he died and they took him away in a black bag to the morgue, I didn't care. But because of this program, because of the spiritual principles of this program, I have learned to forgive him. And I know that he was an addict just like me, but I'm fortunate enough to have to get clean. And I'm fortunate enough to possibly be what he couldn't be. He was incapable of being the person he really was. So, you know, I'm still making amends to a lot of people on my eighth and ninth step. And I try to continue to live a better life. I owe society a lot. I owe the world, I owe my higher power. I owe it to a lot of people and to God to be the best person I can be and not live the life I used to live, and to carry the message that this program works. And I try to do that. The biggest thing that I have received in Narcotics Anonymous since I've been here the last 14 years was the absolute certainty that there is a loving God working in my life. Now, I think that if I, because I worked the steps and because of all the people that helped me, I've come to that belief. And I think that if anybody works the steps, they're going to come to that conclusion too. I don't think there's any way around it. There's something happening here, and it's not because of me. It's by the grace of God that I'm standing right here, right now, that's for sure. So that's how this program works, I think. And it works how and why. I was wondering, why did they ask that question, it works how and why? Why what? Why does it work? Or why does it work for me? Or why does it work for us? I don't know. I just know it does. If you're new, if anybody's new and they're just coming around and they think that they're unique and different and not able to get clean or stay clean, my experience is this, that if you get a sponsor, you raise your hand, you ask for help, you share honestly what's going on with you, no matter what it is, and work the steps and keep going to meetings, that there's a life ahead of you that is beyond anything you could ever dream of. I'm living a life now that I cannot, I couldn't have made it up even if I tried when I first got here. If I made that list of what I wanted in life, I have far exceeded that. And you can have that too. And that's why when I'm asked to come up and do one of these workshops, I don't say no. Even though I know I'm going to be nervous and everything, I don't say no. Because I love Narcotics Anonymous. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And it's I know people, I've had the same friends for 14 years. There's people in here who I've met when I first got here who I am still friends with 14 years later, who I can say that I love them, you know. I was not capable of loving anybody or anything when I got here, and Narcotics Anonymous has given me that. The gift of recovery, the gift of life all over again. And most of all, I didn't wake up this morning thinking about where I was going to get high, where I was going to get the money. It has completely taken the desire and compulsion to use drugs, or especially to use, has taken it away for the most part all the time. I don't think of it very much. So anyway, I'm done. And if you're new, please keep coming back. This program, our primary purpose is to carry the message to the newcomer that this thing works. And that's what I'm going to continue to try to do. And I'm going to sit down. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Before we open the meeting up, for anybody who'd like to share, please remember to come up to the podium one at a time. Also, keep in mind that there are other addicts who might want to share. And I'm going to share because my name's Dave and I'm an addict. And thanks for both of you for sharing. I got out a lot of what you had to say, and I could really relate to what you were saying about, you know, how it works. It's like, get a sponsor, listen to suggestions, work the steps, pray, do service, things like that that help me get out of myself. That's what helps me stay clean just for today. And for me, that's what I need to do on a daily basis, because I'm an addict and I suffer from the disease of addiction. And, you know, it's like I'm addicted to anything that makes me feel good. And when I was out there using, I thought drugs made me feel good. And for a while they did, but then it stopped to work. And then when I came in here, I had to find other things to do to take place of those drugs. And what I find is that I'm an addict. I find something I like, I want to do it to excess. And that's why I need to come to meetings on a regular basis so that I can work on me. Thanks for letting me share. And anybody else who wants to come on up?
We got 10 minutes.
My name is John. I'm an addict.
Hi, John.
Thank you very much. Both of y'all give a wonderful dissertation on how this thing works. But I too ask myself, why does this thing work? You know, it's got to be in a book and writing somewhere. And I'm sure I've heard it many times over the years, but I'm that one that can't remember shit anyway. So I think that's why I go to so many meetings all the time. I really can't remember nothing. But I do remember this much. I remember the way it used to be. It wasn't that pleasant. It wasn't that fun. And it must have been bad enough that when I got here, they opened my mind up enough to say, you know, pay attention, listen. Most important thing you need to know that if you do what we do, you'll get what we get. That's how this thing works. Do what we do. And it's all in our literature. Pete's right. We got literature out now. You know, if you're new, which I don't think most of y'all are new because new people can't afford to come to the convention on Friday afternoon anyways, but that's really how this thing works, you know. You just do what we do and you'll get what we get. If you want recovery, you get with the people, got recovery, and do what they do, and it is all in writing. It's all in our literature. If you want the old way of life, keep doing what you're doing. You'll keep getting the old way of life. It is simple as that. And recently I did a little discussion on our emblem, the diamond inside the circle, and the four sides it represents: self, service, society, and God. Our program is as simple as that. You research that and get with that and try to confine your program into that circle, self, service, society, and God. Man, I tell you what, your life will take off quick. Might be a little confusing at first, but it's going to get good fast. Main point is this thing works, and it works well. We are a program of addicts who recover from the disease of addiction, written by addicts, proven by other addicts. I think that's why it works, because it's addicts for addicts, addicts on addicts recovery. It's that simple. This thing works. It works well. And I was sitting there thinking, man, I'm just so glad to be here. I really am. You know, how and why we get this thing and others don't, it's got to be because they don't do what we do. That's the only thing I can figure out. You know, my God, if they did what we did, they'd get what we got. Man, recovery's good. It's worth it. It is worth getting, believe me. Anyways, I'm glad to be here, and I wouldn't have jumped up if nobody else had jumped up here. So if you want to say anything, come on up, or I'll come back up and tell you a real boring story. So, thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Everybody, my name's Scott, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Scott.
Again, grateful to be here, right? I've been to all of the CMP conventions. And my first convention ever was the first CMP. So I'll just keep coming back. You know, when I came here, right, to this meeting, I thought, well, maybe they're going to do something on It Works, How and Why. Right, the writing of the book. Because I was there when we helped write that book. And I thought I'd share something with you that's really cool. And you can go check it out. Right. When we did a workshop in Baltimore, and we were doing that workshop, I happened to go into the 10th step meeting. Now, I hadn't worked the 10th step yet, so I only had probably a year or two clean. But there were a couple of people from Washington, D.C., right, that I really looked up to. One of them was Billy Z, and the other one was Mark P., if anybody remembers them. And anyway, we were, you know, doing... writing the book, right, or help, you know, putting some things together, and they got to the part where it has something to mention about the 10th step pamphlet. I said, no, that's not right. I was the vice chair of the literature committee of Norvana at the time. I said, it's Living the Program pamphlet. And so somebody said, well, yeah, we need to put that in there, so we changed it to Living the Program pamphlet. And somebody said, well, yeah, when it should be italicized. Well, that guy had one day clean. This was on Saturday, and he'd actually gone back out Friday night. So about two more sentences down, it says, all we really have is today. And so we italicized today for him, because all he had is one day. So if you don't think you matter, a guy with one day clean got something in that book, and it works out and why. He got today. One other thing really quickly. for me, this is how it works. This is kind of fun. So I hope you guys enjoy it, all right?
Where'd the Y come from?
But this is how it works, right? You get honest, right? You identify the problem, become open-minded to find the solution, and become willing to solve the problem. Right? If you're honest, you identify the problem, and you're open-minded to find a solution, but you're not willing to solve the problem, what's that?
Hope.
Yeah, you're holding something back, right? Or you're screwing somebody, right? And usually it's you, okay? Okay, now, if you're open-minded, you find a solution, right? And you solve the problem, but you're not honest with the person you got the problem with. What's that? Mm-hmm, you're hurting somebody, usually yourself. But remember this, honesty without compassion is hostility. I can be so rigorously honest with you, I can hurt you. And I do that a lot. Take other people's inventories. Now, if you're honest, you identify the problem, and you solve the problem, but you're not open-minded to all the solutions to that problem, what's that? We fly right through it. You know those 30-day wonders that have worked all 12 steps, you know, and got this thing, you know, and, you know, we get through it to do it, and, you know, do it real quick, right, to get it done, you know. Go to the service committee meetings, right, the last one, right before the convention so we can be part of it, you know, even though we hadn't done all the rest of them. Now, if we're so open-minded that we see everybody else's problems but our own, what's that? Oh, by the way, oh, yeah. Let me tell you this one. But anyway, that's kind of a fun way on how it works. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, thanks everybody who shared. Let's close the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept things we cannot change, courage to change things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.